Are you ready for a change? Be it physical, mental, or emotional change, you've already got what it takes to make that happen. Your host for the upcoming program, the Matt Newton Power Hour, has trained in martial arts over the course of several decades. Time and time again, his training methods have saved or extended the careers of dozens of NFL, NBA, and Major League Baseball stars. Matt Newton has authored two highly acclaimed books, A Path to Power and The D Factor. The Matt Newton Power Hour starts now. Here's Matt.
Let's do a live radio broadcast. Everywhere. Hey gang, I'm Mac Newton. This is the Power Hour. Welcome aboard. It is a pleasure to have you. Yes, if you detect the smile in my voice, you are absolutely correct. How can I not be happy on a day like today? Hey gang, the Power Hour means that we are getting ready to give you some gas for the rest of the week. We're getting ready to give you some high octane fuel that you can power up your life with me today on our mothership. Of course, the Magic Man. The mothership connection right here. Making it happen. And of course, sitting in her customary seat, making the whole room smell better, the fabulous Natasha.
Hello, everybody. That was a great analogy about the fuel. I love it.
You do? Okay, okay, that's what we're going to give them.
Is it 91? What do you call it by numbers?
It's race gas.
That's okay. Right. That's called, 91 octane.
That was cool.
Yeah, high octane gas. And of course, A-Bomb is sitting in, just checking things out with her notepad at the ready. Yeah. What up, baby? What up?
What up?
What up?
She said it.
She said, what up? Okay, gang, we got a great show on tap for you today. Starting out with our musical guest host, someone that most of you may not have ever heard of before. I know the Magic Man has not, and Natasha and A-Bomb.
No.
Going back to my young adult life, one of my favorite entertainers, one of my favorite singers, Michael Franks. You know, the thing I like about Michael Franks, not only is his voice different, but he doesn't sing your normal lyrics. He basically writes and sings poetry. He tells a story whenever he sings a song. And born in Southern California, somewhere around San Diego, La Jolla, somewhere around there. We were in the same age group. I think he was born in 45 or 44. And you know what? A true jazz singer. In the vein of an Al Jarreau type of singer, very, very melodical, and uses the greatest musicians he can get his hands on. Always, I can give you the names. I'm not sure who's playing on this particular track right here, but he's had artists like Dave Brubeck, Antonio Carlos Jobim, Miles Davis, that playing with him at the same time, The cool thing about Michael Franks is that he doesn't follow the normal routine that you see with so many jazz singers and musicians. Neither one of his parents were musicians. What he did was, he bought, I guess when he got in high school, he bought his first guitar, a Japanese guitar for $30. And he got 6 private lessons. That was it. And that was all of his formal music education. And he went on there to play guitar to accompany himself most of his singing career. So there you go. Michael Franks, songwriter, singer extraordinaire. Lots more coming about him. And he is still performing today. Natasha always wants to know, what are the genres? I mean, what does he do? Basically, he's a jazz singer, jazz songwriter. That's what he does. And he plays guitar, and he plays something called, let me see if I can get the name of it right now. Do I have it written down anywhere here? Oh, gosh. Anyway, he would always pick it up. It was one of those things that they...
It's an instrument?
Yes, an instrument. It's a kaba. Oh, gosh, it doesn't come to my name right now.
It's like a percussion?
Yes, it is a percussion instrument. Wow. Anyway, when he's not, I think it would be called a kabasa. A kabasa. A kabasa. And he would play that on stage. It became like his signature instrument that he would play when he wasn't playing guitar. So anyway, our musical guest host today, great show on tap, Michael Franks. Power Hour gang, coming at you strong. I'm Mac Newton. I'm the host of the Power Hour, co-hosted with, of course, the fabulous Natasha. And we've got a great show. In addition to Michael Franks being our guest host, you guys are going to love listening to his music, to his poetry. I guess what started him, you know, he discovered the poetry of a gentleman by the name of Theodore Rosky when he was in high school. And Theodore Rosky had these off rhymes. They weren't really just your traditional or rhyming poetry. They were off. And he started talking and singing like that in his song. And as you can tell, his voice is kind of, he sings the way Peter White plays guitar. Sort of very soothing, even when it's more up-tempo. I really like the way he approaches it. I kind of got hooked on Michael Franks in my mid-20s. And I only have two of his CDs on my iPod that we use here on the show, but I've got all of his major songs on LP. And I have, because I haven't even begun to transfer my LP collection over to CDs to be on my iPod yet, and I've got well over 9,000 songs on my iPod. So I haven't even begun. You guys have lots and lots of more musical education coming at you. You know, I took the Magic Man and Natasha back to see all of my CDs in our library. The back, kind of impressive, huh, Magic Man?
Yeah, I was just thinking you have your own little record store back there.
It really is. It's literally like going into a radio station and looking at their library of CDs. So it's very cool.
But it's beautifully organized.
Yeah. Oh, of course, you got to be able to have it organized. We can go out there and find what you're looking for very, very quickly. This is so, you know, when we're playing something, let's say the Magic Man wants to, you know, he's going to like what we play on with Michael Franks.
Goes, I'm definitely going to have to get Mr. Franks today.
Well, we just walk back there and pull it off, because we know if it's on the LP, it's right back there in the music library. Yay! There you go.
That's exciting.
That's very exciting. All right, our early segment today is going to be on learning lessons. Our main topic is going to be on discipline. I'm going to define the word for you. I might take some of you by surprise on that. And, of course, hopefully we're going to get to, finally, our 10 steps to permanent change. But first, I want to talk economy. I want to talk the economy. I want to talk attitudes because, you know, this whole thing, you read in the paper. Let me see what the headline was here yesterday or the day before. I don't think I have today's paper, but here it is, just a day or so ago. Alarm accelerates Wall Street sell-off. Everybody's selling their stuff. Everyone's scared. That's what the headline reads. Alarm accelerates Wall Street sell-off. You know what that means? Alarm. What's another word for that? Fear. Sell-off. Let me be afraid and not spend. Let me not buy. Let me tell you what a depression or a recession is. It's nothing but a fear-induced riot. That's all it is. People who are so afraid, convinced by so many so-called experts. Let me tell you what an economist is. An economist is someone who's predicted 18 of the last 2 recessions. Yeah, that means that they're always predicting one. They don't know any more than you or I. A recession, or what people define as a recession, is nothing more than a whole bunch of people buying into the fear, and instead of going on and doing that remodel or buying that new car or getting whatever it was they wanted, they're now going to believe that that the country is in a recession. Oh, I better not spend that. Oh, I better do this. I better do that. And as a result, a whole bunch of people do this together. And then finally, we feel the effects of that attitudinal action. And then everyone says, oh, I guess you're right. We really are in a recession. It reminds me of the story about a guy who had a hot dog stand. He had a hot dog stand and he sold hot dogs. Let's say he sold them in Chicago. And he sold really, really great hot dogs. He sold only the highest quality all beef hot dogs. He made his own buns at home. He chopped up his own red relish, and he grew his own tomatoes and onions, and all of this was fresh. All of it was fresh. He made his own mustard in his own kitchen from natural ingredients. He did it all himself, and people would drive from all the suburbs, would drive downtown and wait in line to stand beside his hot dog to get one of his hot dogs because they were an experience. They were unbelievably good. Business was so good for this guy that he was able to put his son through college. Let's say it was at Northwestern University. He puts him through Northwestern, and the guy studies economics. And so there you go. So he comes and he says to his dad one day, he says, Dad, you know, it's a good thing you put me in school like this because now I can use this information to help you out. I'm going to tell you right now, the country is facing an economic downturn. You can't afford to continue to make your own bread. You can save a lot of money by buying your bread locally, okay? Our bread already prepared. He said, no, but everyone loves my homemade bread. It's the freshest, it's the best. I don't have to use yeast. I don't have to use all this other stuff. I don't have to use preservatives. No, Dad, you don't understand. The economy is getting ready to collapse. The country is on the verge of a recession. You have to cut back. He says, well, you know, you went to school and you studied. Now that, Dad, but you're spending all this money growing all these vegetables, spending money on all this stuff that you need to do that. And you can buy all that at the store a lot cheaper. That's what you need to do. You need to cut back. You need to cut back. And he did. He got tomatoes from the store. They were barely red. He got his relish out of jars, you know, with all the preservatives and salt in them. And he bought buns that were store-bought and packaged in cellophane, okay? And then he bought... He didn't buy the best hot dogs, the ones that were made at the butcher. He went and got a bunch that were wrapped in even thicker cellophane. And he made his hot dogs that way. And one by one, all the people slowly stopped driving in from the suburbs and from downtown and all around to get his hot dog because they weren't special anymore. And after his sales had dropped off about 80%, one day he looked at his son and he said, you know what, boy? You are absolutely right. The country is in a deep recession. Now, let me ask you a question. If he hadn't made all those stupid changes, would people still be coming in to buy his hot dogs? The answer is yes. Of course they would be. So I'm going to tell you what this recession and any other recession is. It's a collective bad attitude. That's exactly what it is. And that collective bad attitude is done nothing but sparked by fear. Fear of so-called experts that don't have a slight idea what they're talking about. In fact, some of these things might be people who have their own interests at heart. I wonder, what is the agenda of the person who decided to lower the credit rating of the United States? That is just one person's opinion. And look what his opinion. This is one person or a group. You gotta be kidding me. So, fear thy name, wow, is recession. Wow. People are wringing their necks and hands in their faces because they're afraid to death. They're afraid to sell anything. People right now are putting off remodeling their homes, buying new cars, putting new swimming pools in their backyard. In other words, they're taking money out of circulation. Which is exactly what we need to do right now. We need to live our lives as we normally do. Why are we so afraid? It has not been the history of Americans to be afraid. We, just like we were after 9/11, I saw so many signs of just rampant fear drove me crazy. Are we becoming a nation of wimps? Of skirt-wearing weenies? Is that exactly what we're becoming today? What are we afraid of? We need to get up on our hind legs and say, you know what? I don't really give a tinker's damn what some idiot in Washington says our credit rating is. I'm putting in my pool. I'm going shopping for my wife's birthday present. I'm buying that new car. In fact, I'm buying a whole new house. Because that's what this place needs. That's why we work every day. Don't be afraid, gang. You know what? If it doesn't work, let me know. I've seen this before. I'm older than most of you guys. I have seen this before. There's the same money available today that it was 5 years ago, maybe more. There is no shortage. There is no recession. There, in fact, I don't even think there is any such a thing as a recession. I just think there is collective fear and panic where people no longer feel that they're safe spending their money. Let's move on past that. Let's talk about Tiger Woods' caddy. Let's talk about that for a moment. Okay? Let me talk about someone who feels entitled.
You have to bring me up to speed on that. I thought I heard someone on the radio, but
you'll be brought up to speed pretty quick, Magic Man. Tiger Woods' former caddy, his name is Steve Williams, worked for Tiger for about 12 years, earned somewhere like $9 million. Because he was Tiger Woods' caddy. Tiger Woods, who over that period of time won more tournaments than anyone else in golf. 2 years ago, Tiger Woods hit a speed bump because of a character flaw, very serious character flaw, that has not been worked out yet. During that time, I imagine that his caddy was out of work, or at least not caddying. So he decided to go to work for someone else. And how, whatever led to it, Tiger decided to fire him. And I guess his caddy was upset by that and wanted to then let the world know what a bad guy Tiger Woods is. Now, you know what? I have not been real appreciative of some of Tiger Woods' behavior over the last 2 years, and I have been especially critical of how he approached his recovery. And I predicted a lot of the things that are happening right now, and he's finally doing some of the things that I said he should have done in the first place, which was clean house, get rid of all the negative people from around him. I also predicted possibly stepping away from the game for a year or two. I said that 2 years ago. Didn't take my advice until he was forced away from the game. I think you remember, Abom, me saying that in class. The things I say on the air are there for all to hear, and I don't back away from any of them. I am not trying to be right. I don't care about being right. I'm expressing an opinion based on lots of experience and very clear linear thinking about the situation that's happening objectively. Tiger Woods needed to clear his mind and change. Tiger Woods had proven that he could no longer go on the way he was anymore. How many of us have been in that situation? Oh, so many. But unfortunately, so many people, I'm going to talk about this in my early segment when I get to learning lessons. But anyway, whatever dispute there was, it was between them. Tiger decides to fire Steve Williams. Steve Williams says, oh, he didn't fire me face to face. He fired me on the phone. Tiger said he fired him face to face. Who cares? He was fired. Who cares? You see, one of the things that one word or two words. I should say that Steve Williams needs to learn and put in his own vocabulary is, one is thankfulness or gratitude, and the other is class. Class. A classy person does not go to the newspaper and diss someone who was responsible for you earning $9 million over the previous 12 years and building your name up bigger than any other caddy in the world. Name me one other caddy who carries golf clubs for a living besides Steve Williams. Maybe there's one called Fluff or something like that, but you know what? He worked for Tiger Woods too. Class is the word that he should understand. Class. The other is gratefulness. You know what? Even if you didn't like the way Tiger handled it, you know what you do? You demonstrate your class. And when someone says to you, you know what? This is the way life is. Things happen. We move on. And nothing would have been said. Instead, right now, Mr. Williams, you are considered a sore loser, a poor winner, when after the guy whose bag he was carrying, by the way, he was carrying the bags, not making shots. They turned the cameras on him after this golfer won and his name is Adam Scott, won this most recent tournament. Tiger finished tied for 37th or something, 18 shots behind Adam Scott. And Stevie Williams is going, this is the greatest day of my life. This was the finest week I've ever had. Now, this is comparing this week to the week to the tournament after which Tiger's father passed away and Tiger won that tournament. And the two of them embraced on the green. So this week was bigger than that. This week was bigger than Tiger's wins at the Masters. Oh, what the need for revenge. The small-minded. What it does to us. And during this entire press conference, did he once say, this was my greatest win. Like he played golf, did not mention the name of Adam Scott, who actually won this tournament for him. And through it all, Tiger has said nothing. The one who has, the world has almost rejoiced in watching fall from grace. It seems to me there's nothing that people enjoy watching more than people fail, especially people who have succeeded at a high level. I tell people, be careful when you stand up and make yourself seen. You also make yourself a target. I know that well. Through it all, Tiger has said nothing. Well, Williams has been soundly criticized from all sides, but people with that need for leveling the playing field, for getting back, for getting even. Unless you change from the inside, that's all you'll have to share with the world. And now, Mr. Williams, more than any of the victories supposedly that you have on your scorecard, you will be known more for this than anything else. Happy day. Hey gang, I'm Mac Newton, and this is the Power Hour. It is now about 22 minutes past the hour. And I wanted to throw those two things out at you because they were definitely on my mind. And now it is time for shout-outs, as we always do. usually about 15 minutes ago. Hey, gang, shout outs coming at you. Wow. Let's go with Kirk. Kirk and his beautiful girlfriend in the UK, Veronica G in the Philippines. Thanks for the message, VG. I appreciate it. Yes. We're thinking about you. Larry and Kimmy here in the Valley. DZ in Michigan. Man, I bet your physique is changing working out with me online. Chris and Nick right here in the Valley. GA in GA. Yes, I got your message, and we may share part of this. He thought our last show was the best we've ever done, and so did several other of you guys from last week, and thank you so much. I'm flattered by your praise. You know what, gang? It's I do it because I enjoy it. It was fun. In fact, when we signed off the air, I think Magic Man, you can confirm that one of the first things out of my mouth was, I said, "Now that was a live radio broadcast."
That was definitely a powerful one last week.
I think it was. I think it was, and that's really the reason in which we do this show. Okay, Nick and the gang up in Denver, and Barry and the boys in Taekwondo in Chicago. Alfredo in Mexico, Andy over in Spain, thanks for the email. Al in South FLA, and Al, your email was so compelling, I'm going to share a little bit of it a little bit later in the show. And of course, our furthest west listener, Ryan Hodges in Alaska. Thanks for being on the show. Thank you, gang. All right. For those of you who are new listeners, I'm Mac Newton. This is the Power Hour. We do it right here at MacNewton.com every Thursday at 5. It's a beautiful day in downtown Phoenix, Arizona, where we are originating from. It's 107 degrees today. There is a mixture of clouds and blue sky about, but we haven't rained in a couple of days. Actually, there were a few drops in the air today, but not enough to really do anything. I'm not sure it even hit the ground, but it's a typical summer day in Phoenix. 107 degrees. It is the the 11th already? The 11th of August? Are you kidding me? Will it slow down, please? Will someone press a pause button? My goodness. Time is just going by so very, very fast. As I said, we got a great show on tap for you today. Our early segment, as soon as we finish our break. In fact, I think I'll start it. What how much time we got before the break, Magic Man?
We're about 3 minutes out here.
About 3 minutes out from the break. I think we'll just deal with something else. We'll deal with this email before. And then we'll get back to our early segment and our main topic in the last half of the show. Our email that we're going to feature this week comes in from Al from South FLA. You recognize the name because he's in our shout outs almost every week. He starts out by saying, "What's going on? Hope all's well here in Phoenix for me. And, of course, the fabulous Natasha." He mentions you by name.
Thank you.
Yes, Al in South FLA. I hope that everything's going well. Excellent. And we're having lots of success. Well, things are going great, Al. Thanks for asking. And he says, "Everything in Miami is great. A little bit of rain, but other than that, everything's great." Then he goes on to address his question. And it's a very serious question. He says, "I've always wanted to ask you a question. If you can't get back to me on it, I totally understand. Well, I'm getting back to you because I think other people have the question too. I just want to get it out there. And the question is, what personally motivates you to strive for the best at what you do? What gets you up in the morning? What do you tell yourself to wake up energized to pursue your goals? I'm looking to start out my own business, and my mentor told me that if I want to be a millionaire, I have to start waking up about 5 a.m. every day. And it's like impossible for me to do it consistently. And also, what motivates you to keep learning and to keep personally developing? I used to have a passion for learning, but now I feel like it's kind of died down a bit. I know it's foolish. And at 27 years of age, to think that you know it all, but sometimes I feel like I know enough. It would be great to get your opinion on this." Well, Al, let me say this, that you're showing a tremendous amount of, maturity, even by being able to frame those questions up for yourself. Because most people who think they know it all don't even have those questions. So the last one I'm going to scratch off. You don't think you know it all. I think that feeling comes to you once in a while, But I think you know, even when it shows up, that it's fool's gold. I don't think you know it all, and I think you want to learn more. That's why you're asking the question. Let's go back at the top and deal with them one by one. Okay, what gets me up in the morning? Well, you know what gets me up in the morning? The fact that I have a reason to get up. What's your reason? And it can't be just money. Everyone thinks that money is a great motivator. I don't think it's nearly as great a motivator as people want it to be. And I think that people are disappointed when people are not motivated so much by money. Even people who have a lot of it sometimes don't care about it. They just get it. You know, it's sometimes it's not even what they went after in the first place. I was interviewed for a TV show several days ago. And after the host of the show, one of the anchors on Channel 12 here in Phoenix, a beautiful lady, Kim Covington, she says, you know, she says, Mac, I've seen all of these things on TV, the P90X, the different shows, all these so-called superstars in LA and stars to the trainers and trainers to the stars and so forth. And you know what? You're just so much more. And I said, you know, no. Stop. Let me finish. She says, no, you are. You're just so much more. And, you know, you're trying to be humble about it. I said, no, not really. She says, no, but you're just so much more. And she says, I guess it's just, you're just really not interested in the money, are you? I says, I'm not really. I'm really interested in the people that I deal with. I'm really interested in people changing. I'm interested in having an impact, a footprint, an effect on this world. Money is just money. You know, it can't define you. If it is, the definition of who you are is very shallow. I am not motivated by money. Al, we all need it, and you can get as much of it as you want in this world because it's one of the easiest things to get. Compare getting money to true love. If you've ever tried to get true love, you'll know that getting money is far easier. How about a person who needs a little extra time at the end of their life? They may have a lot of money, but it won't buy them one additional second. So money is not that important overall. There are other things far more important. So you need a bigger reason than money. And that's what you got to figure out. That's what gets me up in the morning. I've got a reason to get up in the morning, a purpose. My life is extremely purposeful, okay? And in anything to stay on top of it, if you're going to be the best you can be, not comparing myself to someone else because I don't do that. I don't compete, I create. And if I'm going to create continuously, I have got to keep making myself better in every way possible. I'm answering your questions now, one by one, and you need that. You need that reason. Okay. And there's your passion. You felt it in my voice. Let me know what you think. Our musical guest host is a young man. I know he's young because he's exactly the same age I am. Michael Franks in 1975 released his second album, my favorite, called The Art of Tea. And that's where he started a long relationship with Warner Brother Records. The Art of Tea featured some of the greatest musicians in the world on that. Joe Sample, Larry Carlton, The Crusaders. And included a song called Popsicle Toes. One of his signature songs. In his third album called Sleeping Gypsy, released somewhere around 1977, The song The Lady Wants to Know, partially recorded in Brazil, one of my favorites. Anyway, these are some of his best known works. You know, When I Give My Love to You, Popsicle Toes, Monkey See, Monkey Do. All from Michael Franks. I'm Mac Newton. This is the Power Hour. It's the bottom of the hour right now. The Magic Man is making the show happen, sitting in our customer spot, the fabulous Natasha. A little under the weather today, but K-Maker, she wouldn't miss the show for anything. And, of course, A-Bomb. You guys stay where you are. We'll be right back.
but it's not now. In the pool, deep in dragonfly summer.
Hi everyone, this is Zach Geist, also known as the Magic Man. The Power Hour is brought to you by Newton Fitness Online, the same high conditioning and training that Mac Newton provides in his beautiful Central Phoenix, Arizona location is now available to you online, 24 hours a day. It couldn't be easier. Just log on to MacNewton.com and go to Mac's gym. Yep, his gym is online now. Just go and select your fitness level and go to class. Okay, don't put it off. Go to MacNewton.com now, check it out, and get in the best shape of your life.
Hey gang, I'm Mac Newton. I want to give you a little bit of an update on what's going on with our championship level goal setting program. It is taking off like a rocket ship. Now, I realize I don't have a place online where you can order it. However, you can call my office and speak to Lisa, 602-957-6492, and you can reserve your copy of championship level goal setting, which will give you a 2-CD program along with a workbook. The CDs will guide you through the voice with you and members of your team, either in your office or in family, through the entire championship level goal setting program. It is amazing. As a matter of fact, pretty soon, Blair and I will be embarking on a tour where we're going to be demonstrating this live and in person. So if you see us coming to your area, be sure and jump on board. The championship level goal setting program is now available. We've been talking about it online. You've been hearing about it on Facebook. Now is your chance to get your copy, all right? So call 602-957-6492 and reserve yours right now. Temporarily, copies are limited, so jump in and make sure you are not left behind. Hey gang, welcome back. Check this song out. It's going out from me to the fabulous Natasha.
I'm speechless.
Check it out.
Song.
It's nice.
There's a picture of me. That's ancient history now, completely. Now when it comes to the subject of happiness, I'm the man. In summary, look for a soulmate, someone whose love will go the distance.
That's what you need, gang. Forget about these little quick fixes. You gotta find someone you can go the distance with and stop resisting. That's what I like about Michael Franks. His songs all have a message. He's just taking lessons and putting them into a musical form, making it sound good with some of the greatest musicians on the planet. Yes. Furthering your musical education, gang. I got mine. You gotta get yours. Hey, gang, welcome back. I'm Mac Newton. This is the Power Hour. Check out. Yeah. Quality, my man. That's Michael Franks, spelled F-R-A-N-K-S. Check him out. I think you're going to like him. He grew up listening to Patti Austin, Brenda Russell, you know, David Sanborn, to name a few. Some of his songs have been, some of his original songs have been recorded by other great artists and performers like Patti LaBelle and Carmen McRae. The Manhattan Transfer, you know, Diana Krall, Popsicle Toes, one of her favorite songs. People think she wrote it. That's Michael Franks. Okay, gang, welcome back to the show. All right, let's get back into it here. My early segment today, not so early.
It's a middle segment.
Well, we're getting to it. And by the way, let me see if I can pull this up here someplace. I love this computer stuff that we have here these days, gang. I just love it. Because GA sent, I just want to see what how he said this here. GA is a, okay, here we go. Hands down, I just want you to get this first line. He said, he says, Mac Daddy, speaking about last week's show, this was the best show you've ever had, hands down, hit me right between the eyes. He says, I love this edge that you brought to that last segment of the class. He calls the show a class. I think you should do more of this more often to this degree because it's really helping me. In fact, I will be listening to this class again to study it some more. He calls the show a class. Well, I'm flattered.
It seems like in a lot of ways, I told you, you know, sometimes when I'm editing it, I listen back to it and get, you know, another lesson out of it.
Yes, exactly.
That's how I get it.
Yeah, the more you listen to it. Gang, my job, your job, during our time on Earth, is to learn lessons. There are no mistakes. There are no failures. There are only lessons. You see, a lot of people, when they are living their life and they say, I made a mistake, the very statement of that precludes the possibility of that mistake or failure being of any value to them, because the word mistake to most people means something that happened that had nothing to really do with them. It just kind of fell out of the blue. I made a mistake. It could happen to anybody. It was a mistake. Okay? But no, it's not a mistake. It's a lesson. And unless you examine that lesson, that failure, that mistake, and get what is there for you to learn from it, then it was meaningless. Now, a key point is you can never move past a lesson until it is completely learned, until you have gotten everything out of it that was there for you to learn. You'll never get past that lesson. A lot of people think they do get past the lesson because when they make a mistake, they say, oh, that was a mistake, and they move on. Well, see, they didn't learn anything from the lesson. They think that lesson's behind them. It's not. It was just a mistake. No. It's going to come back again. But when it shows up again, it'll have a different disguise, and it will have far more dire consequences, and it will be far more greater consequences. And it will keep coming back until you finally learn it. And see, here's the deal. The deal is that when you make a mistake and you don't learn from it, you may not even recognize it as the same mistake that you made 6 months ago or a year ago or 5 years ago. You may have made that mistake every 6 months, and every 6 months it comes back different. It's a chameleon. And until you learn from it, examine, ask the question, what is this? What do I learn from this? What is this here to teach me? You gotta take a step back. This is just not some random occurrence here. What am I to learn from this? And then if you finally learn it, then you're able to move past it. So, my advice to you, learn your lessons quickly and move on. Now, You got to learn the lesson quickly. Don't you know everything in life, gang, is time dated? Everything is time dated. I'm going to talk about that again a little bit later in the show. Time dated. So let's say you make a mistake. And you may even realize, okay, all right, that may have something to do with me. I'll get to it. But like so many other things, we procrastinate. See, people who don't believe in themselves, people with low self-esteem, they procrastinate easily. They procrastinate early and often. It's what they do. No matter what it is we're talking about, they put it off. Why? Because they don't believe in themselves. They have low self-esteem. They don't feel deserving, or they don't feel capable. They don't feel resilient or even creative enough to take care of it right now. I'll get back to you on that. Well, the thing is, you see, time is an elusive quality. And see, time, we haven't been able to really define it or capture its essence since the beginning of human history. You know what? Anyone who's a teacher can understand what I'm going to say. I can teach what I might say is a perfect class. I mean, everything went perfect. Now I got to teach another one 3 hours later. And I may even have the exact same people. I may have the exact same topic. Everything exactly the same. I can approach it the same way, start at the same moment. It will be different. Why? Different time. Time changes everything. So when you get back to it, it's no longer the same. It's no longer the same. It doesn't look the same. The lesson you could have learned had you tried to learn your lesson quickly is not as easily digested. It's not so easily pulled from the mistake now. It's different. You got to learn your lessons quickly. You got to get after them fast. You can't wait for it. All right, let me go back a little bit here, okay? All right. Okay. Our job is to learn lessons. That's what we're here for, is to continually learn lessons. How many lessons have you learned today? You know what? You ask a person that, I'd be willing to bet you walk down the street between right where we are on Indian School Road to Central, 5 miles away from here or more, you won't find one person in 200 to be able to tell you a lesson they've learned today. Something specific that they learned today. Oh, what? These people didn't make any mistakes? They didn't change lanes without signaling? They didn't almost back over a guy on a bicycle in the parking lot? They didn't put their mayonnaise jar in the shelf beside the refrigerator? Well, of course they did. But they didn't learn any lessons from them. Okay, going forward now, we can't move past the lesson. But see, you get no notification of that. No one informs you. Mac, come on. You can't expect us to find the meaning in a lesson. It's like trying to find a needle in a haystack. You know what? That's really not that big of a deal. You know why? And I've always wondered about that statement. People always assume that you can't find a needle in a haystack. It all depends on how big the needle is.
Or how much hay there is.
Exactly. See?
You can use scissors.
Right. So it depends on how big the needle is. So if you look, but people who are saying that, again, are people who don't believe in themselves very much. They're looking for a reason to substantiate why they haven't even looked at the haystack to find the lesson to be learned. The consequences that continue to increase exponentially as a result of this lesson not being learned, the things that can happen become more dire until something that was fairly small in the beginning, when this lesson first showed up, that could have been learned and dealt with maybe a gesture, a moment's attention, now can lead to your demise. Learn your lessons quickly. Now, final point. Learn your lessons quickly and move on. See, a lot of people, even if they do spend time to look inside to understand what that lesson is, they didn't dwell upon them. They dwell upon past failures, mistakes. Another characteristic of people with low self-esteem, people don't believe in themselves. They hang on to them, and hanging on to past failures and mistakes simply makes them, it makes them living in the past, it makes it defensive, it gets them always back on their heels, reacting to situations as opposed to responding to opportunities. My job and your job during all our time here on earth is to learn lessons. Is to learn lessons. All right, let me read it again. My job and yours during our time on earth is to learn lessons. There are no mistakes. There are no failures, only lessons. And you can never move past a lesson until it is truly and completely learned. It will continue to show up in different disguises and with far greater consequences and more dire circumstances until you do learn it. So, learn your lessons quickly and move on. Again, I'm Mac Newton, and this is the Power Hour on a beautiful Thursday afternoon in downtown Phoenix, Arizona. I hope it's beautiful wherever you are. I know you guys are listening to us all around the globe. It's the beauty of the internet, you know, this technology we have. People are listening to us in Spain and South Florida and Alaska and the Philippines and in China and all over the world, worldwide, on this thing called the World Wide Web, you know, on the internet, you know. Of course, Americans call it internet, like get her done. They don't say internet. Internet.
It seems like in a lot of UK and places they call it interweb.
Interweb, do they really? Interweb, okay. All right, gang, I hope you're enjoying the show. I certainly am. And I want to define a word that I have on my wall in my studio. It's called discipline. In fact, that room is called the House of Discipline. House of Discipline. I define discipline this way. Doing what you should do, when you should do it, whether you like it or not. Okay, before we get started on this, I should let you know it is now exactly 18 minutes past the hour. Okay? 18 minutes past the hour of 5 o'clock on Thursday in downtown Phoenix. And by the way, all of you Power Hour listeners know that if you're ever in Phoenix, you, by saying, I'm a Power Hour listener, you are entitled to work out with me in my gym, free of charge, for a class. All right? And who knows, if you're only going to be here for 2 days, I'll probably throw in the second one. All right?
You're very generous.
Oh.
Does it apply to me and Zach?
No, it does not.
You're the best listeners.
I know you are, but you are right here in Phoenix. Zach's got that 7-minute workout he's still working on.
right from my house.
7-minute workout.
Have you got that thing down yet, Zach?
I mean, room for improvement, of course.
So in other words, your answer is?
No, sir.
No, okay. Okay.
He's honest.
Baby steps.
Okay, It's amazing. So many things have been answered yes or no. So, okay. It's only 7 minutes, Zach.
I'm still doing it with my bike rides. But,
I understand.
I haven't nailed down.
You haven't nailed down all 7 minutes.
I can go the 7 minutes, but I was saying it's not an easy task.
Have you? All your technique is exactly perfect and everything.
No, definitely not. Okay. Definitely not.
Let us know about that. We'll stay in touch. Okay. But you know what? They're doing it on the beach in China. I got pictures. Oh, yes, I got pictures here on my, I'm not going to go to my inbox and try to find it, but I could. I got pictures of people
That's
doing
awesome.
It. Yeah, I got pictures doing it. People doing our 7-minute work, take the TV out there and plug it in at the resort. They're doing the 7-minute workout all around the world.
Mexico, too? Right?
Yes, in Mexico.
On the beach?
Yeah, Michael Ellenby, who climbed to Everest, had it on the beach down there in Mexico. Wow. Isn't it amazing? Yeah. I love that. Okay. as I said, I define discipline as doing what you should do, when you should do it, whether you like it or not. Sounds simple, right? Sure does. But it's not. Very likely, developing personal self-discipline, I guess that's redundant, developing personal discipline is one of the most difficult things you'll ever attempt in your lifetime. All right? You know, as a nation, as a country, we have the technology to conquer outer space, and we have for some time, cure devastating diseases, and even to use our mental capabilities to create alternative fuels, and as well as other technological marvels like the internet and the computers we use every day, and iTunes and iPods and all sorts of technological marvels. However, as individuals, we face a very, very difficult but important challenge, and that is the development of personal discipline. I think that this development of personal discipline is possibly the most difficult, but probably the most important achievement skill for people to develop. And I mean doing what you should do, when you should do it, whether you like it or not. Now, a lot of people do what they should do, but they don't do it when they should. They get around to it. As I said earlier in my early segment, all success is time dated. All success has an expiration date on it. And we all know this already. Even if it comes down to something as simple as borrowing a pair of hedge trimmers from your neighbor. You might know, oh, my neighbor, Carl, he has hedge trimmers. I need them. I'm going to use them tomorrow. You know what? I'll just wait to go over and borrow them from him tomorrow. And as soon as you go over there tomorrow to buy those hedge clippers, when you, Carl says, oh, man, I wish you'd come over yesterday. I had them. You know what I did? I gave them away this morning. I gave them away to a friend of mine to stop by, and he saw them in the garage, and he needed them, and he took them. And you're thinking, gosh, not only could I have borrowed them from him yesterday, he would have given them to me. Now, we've all had incidents like that happen to us, all of us. So that proves to you the time connection to all of our challenges. Our goals, our activities are all time dated. So it's not about just doing what you should do. It's about doing when you should do it. And of course, whether you like it or not. You got to do what you should do, when you should do it, whether you like it or not. That third one, that's an interesting one for me. Whether you like it or not. I hear that a lot. I like to work out with you, Mac, but I don't want to give up my wine every day. I don't like being sore. I don't like green vegetables. I don't like to sweat. I don't like heat. To me, all those things don't make any sense at all. To do what you should do, when you should do it, whether you like it or not. Once you bring that mantra into your belief system, imagine if every thought, every word that came out of your mouth, every thought that came out of your brain was determined by that mantra that you're going to do what you should do, when you should do, whether you like it or not. That would change your life. When is that? Huh?
Absolutely, sir.
That would change it. I mean, whether you like it or not. This one's, do you like that? I don't know. You think, I don't know. You know what? It's something I should do, and I'm going to do it when I'm supposed to do it. See, because if you don't do it when you're supposed to do it, it's not going to count. It's not going to count. It's not going to matter. And whether you like it or not, what does that mean? That means you bring a smile to doing it. You don't do it, but you're not one of these people that say, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. But I'm not happy about it. Well, you know what? It doesn't count. It doesn't count. It's not the same thing. You've got to do what you should do, when you should do it, whether you like it or not. And you know what? Whenever you're working for someone, if you've got an employee that every time you bring them a job, even if they do it, they roll their eyes, they hunch their shoulders, they slouch off, and you look at them, you don't ever feel like giving them another job to do ever again. But if you give someone an assignment, a job, and they're going and they say, give me that. I want to do it right now because that's my motto. Do it now, do it fast. Do it now, do it fast, put a smile on your face. Do it now, do it fast. Do it now, do it fast, put a smile on your face. Do it now, do it fast, put a smile on your face. When you get, here, give me, I'll get that done right now. You look at that person. Now, the first time they do that, you notice it, but now it's the second time. It's the second time they do it. What happens then? It's the second time. Now you think, wow, this is something special. Now the third time, now you're thinking that's their character. That's who they are. Wow. That's who they are. Wow. You have come to the attention of other people. And when you have personal discipline, you come to the attention of other people fast. When you have personal. Now, there are two kinds of discipline. There is imposed discipline, I mean where I get you to do what you should do, and there is instilled discipline where it comes out of you from the inside what you're supposed to do. It's 12 minutes before the hours on the Power Hour game. Here's the process. Early in the game, I'm teaching you, I'm going to impose discipline upon you. I'm going to have you do what I want you to do. But in time, that those lessons that we've learned by making mistakes, step by step, and through leadership, we talked about last week, leadership now is bringing about instilled discipline. And now that discipline has to come from the inside of you. I knew at a certain point in my Taekwondo career, Mr. Un walked up to me and he said, you know, I'm going to tell you something. I can't carry you anymore. See, he had a large school with lots of white belts, and lots of lower ranks. And when I was a second degree black belt, I remember the day he said it to me. He says, I need your discipline. I need. Yes, when I tell you to do something, you do it. You do it. But I need you to come up with it. If you can't start showing me that leadership and showing me discipline and bringing it about, I don't have any more need for you here. I can't use you anymore. That's what it comes down to, gang. At some point, I don't care how good you are at responding to imposed discipline, it's got to come from inside of you. Or the world has no more use for you. That sounds harsh, but that's exactly what it is. The world has no more use for you. You're going to have to show the way for others. And I looked him in the eye and I knew he was serious. And that began the series of changes. If Al is wondering, that led me to the person I am today. Gang, I'm going to tell you something. It's taken me a long time to become the person I am today. It's taken me a long time. It's a long, arduous journey that if you're waiting to get started on it, you're wasting time and you have no guarantee of how much time you have. If you better get started right now. And these lessons don't necessarily take long. But they need your attention. They need your attention 100% right now. Instilled discipline is what we want. Imposed is what takes place early on. And discipline means doing what you should do, when you should do it, whether you like it or not. Do it now, do it fast. Do it now, do it fast, put a smile on your face. I've been teaching for over 38 years professionally. And I have noticed a weakness, a basic unwillingness, if you like, on the part of a lot of people to cope with unpleasantness. I mean, just unpleasantness of any kind, just difficulty in general. Again, another sign of people who don't believe in themselves, who don't like themselves very much. People with low levels of self-esteem have a weakness in dealing with unpleasantness. I have a question I ask myself all the time whenever I feel stress. what unpleasant reality of my life am I now not facing? You're not going to get many people to ask themselves that question, because no one wants to have to face that. Because if they have to face it, now they'll have to ignore it consciously. It's easy to pretend they didn't know it. But if you ask yourself that question, what unpleasant reality are you not facing? If you actually ask yourself that question and think about it, you'll figure it out. But now what are you going to do about it? Now you must change. Or live with the idea that you are choosing to be the way you are. You can no longer say it's an accident. I'm just this way because my father was this way, and his father before him went this way. It runs in the family. It doesn't run in the family. There's nothing running in the family except the color of your eyes, possibly in your hair, and how tall you are. These are nothing but choices. So I've noticed this, and it seems that whenever people are confronted with unpleasantness of any kind or difficulty of any kind, they want to just run away from it. And they will do that in a lot of different ways. They blame other people. They get divorces. They quit their jobs. They do all kinds of things to get away from the difficulty. Instead of doing what they should do, when they should do it now, do it fast, with a smile on their face, whether you like it or not. Come on, I didn't make it up. I'm just bringing it to you. Don't be yelling at me.
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, I started working out with you almost 5 years ago. And now that you brought those things, I didn't eat green vegetables, I didn't follow a lot, but I never thought about what I don't like, what makes me uncomfortable. But I always thought I would love to be healthy, and I like to look good. I only concentrated on positive, and the outcome what brings the exercising every day, and it's a part of the discipline.
That's a positive attitude right there. You're talking about a positive attitude. Natasha, not very many people have that. To get to that point where they can look at it from that perspective is fine. Right now, we're far more rudimentary. We are dealing with people putting off the pain, and as a result of avoiding the pain, they bring on the suffering. They want to avoid the pain at all cost. You didn't. You evolved past that point. And that's what we got to get people to step by step. We've got to get into this process of change, folks. Yeah, we want to run away from this unpleasantness. We want to run away from this pain. Turn our heads. Or just simply hope it disappears, goes away. It wasn't there to begin with. So in this sense, personal discipline is an ability to cope. It's an ability to continue on, to not give up in the face of challenge, in the face of adversity, to push against, and in some cases, to just simply endure. It requires effort on your part. I mean, to do what you should do, when you should do it, whether you like it or not. Do it fast, do it now, put a smile on your face. Do it now, do it fast. Make that your habit. Do it now, do it fast, with a smile on your face. Do it now, do it fast. Pretty soon you'll have a brand new habit. 21 days later, brand new habit. You know, I'm going to finish with this thought. We got a little less than 5 minutes here, folks. And I'm going to shock a couple of you right now, and I'm not going to apologize for it. Some people love to say that, you know, not having discipline. And I've heard that a lot, because discipline has been that thing that has really saved my life. I've been fortunate enough to train with some very disciplined people. People that were good at imposing discipline, but were equally at good at expecting me to demonstrate instilled discipline. Either way, it was discipline on display. And in order for me to remain with them, I had to change and grow. Now we're looking for change. That's all it is right now. See, I'm saying you can't go on any further where you with what you've got right now. You're 27. Now, every year you live past here with this attitude, you won't be growing. You'll just be adding on more years. You'll get to a point to where, okay, you'll be 30 or 35, but you won't have 35 years experience. You may have 1 year's experience 35 times. So in order to keep growing right now, and you realize it, that's the beauty of it, Al, you realize it, and now it's time for you to change. You're saying, I can't go any further than I am right now unless I change. That's what you would say. I can't go any further. If I don't change right now, I'm going to stay the same as I am. And since we know we can't stay the same, that means you're going to regress. You're going to move backwards. Exactly. That's exactly right. So, Al, right now it's time for a change. And you know it, you feel it in your bones, but there's a little bit of resistance there. Okay? It's time to make a change. It's time to move ahead. Now, as I said, some people say that not having discipline or having to be disciplined is a form of freedom. You know, simply doing whatever it is you want to do. In other words, just freedom to be, you know, Woodstock. Yay. Actually, it isn't freedom at all. What we're talking about here actually is bondage. Yeah, worse than that. A lack of personal discipline is slavery. Slavery is a very strong word. It has a real negative connotation in this country. It refers back to a time when a whole group of people were denied the basic dignity and respect and the ability to have families and live together and own land and buy things and go places and travel around and do things. In other words, they were slaves. I'm talking complete bondage slavery. I'm not talking about serfdom. I'm not talking about what you may have found in Poland or Russia. I'm talking about complete abject bondage. A very strong word, and yes, that's the word I intended to use. People who don't have discipline. This lack of personal discipline, in my mind, is like slavery. Why? Because if I cannot, or I will not say no, or I'm going to always pursue the avenue of least resistance, and no matter what it is that pops up, or I'm going to seek the promise and the fulfillment of immediate gratification at every turn. Well, what I am doing is I'm allowing myself to be handcuffed, to be tied down, to be actually shackled and bound by any desire, any impulse, any yearning that comes my way. And that's not only slavery, that's self-imposed slavery. It doesn't get any worse than that. And the results are simple, people. Tremendous loss, potential, revenue, stress, and most importantly, lost self-respect. And in most cases, a life that exists in a state of extended mediocrity rather than that life being recognized by its full potential on display. One thing is for sure. Once you begin the practice of personal discipline, your life is going to change, and it's going to change immediately. People are going to notice you. You will come to the attention of other people. Why? Because simply discipline is not practiced by that many. And it's going to set you up as an example to follow. And let's face it, we need it now more than ever before. In the history of this nation, discipline. In our homes, in our schools, in our government, in every area. Well, for the second week in a row, gang, we did not get to the 10 steps of permanent change. And I won't promise we'll do it next week, but I'm going to put it high on our list. In fact, I'm going to have Natasha write it down for us. We will probably set it up as our early segment. The 10 steps to permanent change is our early segment. Whew. Well, GA, it may not have been last week, but I tell you what, we had another powerful show coming at you today.
It was very powerful. You know what? It was a great show today.
I think so, too. Started with our musical guest host, Michael Franks. And I hope you guys enjoyed learning about Michael. And maybe you can get out there and pick up one of his. I mean, my goodness, I don't know how many albums he's put out over time. What you listened to today, one of my favorites was Objects of Desire. We didn't play that for you today. Today we did Dragonfly Summer from 1993 on Warner Brothers Records. You might be able to find that. So go check it out. Okay. And one of my other ones we were going to feature was Barefoot on the Beach. Maybe we will in the future. That's from 1995. Windham Hill. So check it out. You might be able to pick up some things by Michael Franks. Hey, listen, gang, as we always do at this time, I want to say thanks. Thanks to all the folks that have helped me over the years. Bob Adlock, who believed in me enough to put us on TV with the Power Hour. And Pat McMahon, okay? JC up in San Francisco. Sorry about the Giants. And I also want to say thanks to JB. We miss you, brother. Still, all this time. Thanks to the Magic Man for making it happen. You make it sound good on the air. I hope you guys enjoy the show. And, of course, the fabulous Natasha. We'll remind you guys to be good to yourselves. Be good to those close to you. Good to the ones you love. Don't just save your best behavior for strangers. And be true to yourself, which means let your words and your behaviors match. We'll see you next week. Peace. 3, 2, 1. The Mac Daddy is out.